It's your girl KV
and Celine,
and we're back with another episode of the Hood Health Report. Today we are going to talk about Black Wall Street, or if you call it the Tulsa Race Massacres. I was influenced to do this episode because I saw this first article.
Oh, who said that?
Seven sets of remains exhumed, 59 graves found after latest search for remains of the Tulsa Race Massacre victims. So this article states that 59 graves were found containing seven sets of remains that have been exhumed. These graves were unmarked and previously unknown. The remains have been sent to forensic labs in efforts to identify them and determine their cause of death. These remains will be returned to their original grave sites after forensic analysis is complete and any DNA is collected. Now, that for me was a bit interesting, because it's not like these people were buried respectfully. You know, they were just kind of tossed in these mass graves. So it's like, oh, we'll return them back to where we found them. Mm-hmm. It's like, how about you give them a proper burial, especially if you get DNA off them to be able to identify who they were, reaching out to family, things of that nature. But
You would think.
Guess that's too much like, right. So there have been previous searches that have resulted in 67 sets of remains located. This was the third excavation carried out in search of about 75 to 300 black people that were killed during the 1921 massacre at the hands of a white mob that terrorized the Greenwood neighborhood, which is the black section of Tulsa. So they don't even know how many bodies that they're looking for. They just kind of...
Like a rough estimate. Mm-hmm. This could be anywhere from between this number.
Mm-hmm. So they're just kind of like almost aimlessly going around digging up grave sites or what could be grave sites to see if they'll find a bunch of bodies. So, yeah, that was the article that influenced this episode. And now we're going to get into the timeline of what happened and how this happened.
Yeah, so a rough background, a lot of people came to Tulsa because there were like a lot of black codes in the South. Those are just laws that restrict black African Americans from being able to vote. And they wanted to have like a little bit of, you know, freedom. Indians were already in Tulsa. So when the blacks came, it really was just them trying to leave behind that racial discrimination. And then so just so you're aware, Black Wall Street, what it was at the turn of like the 20th century, a bunch of African Americans founded and developed Greenwood. It's a district in Tulsa. It's in North Tulsa. It was built on formerly owned Indian territory, and the community flourished because of the black economic and culture, and it was like a mecca for them. And it was around until May 31st, 1921. That next day, that will be when they had the massacre occur and the riots. Between segregation laws that prevented blacks residents from shopping in white neighborhoods and the desire to keep money in their own community, that's what kind of funded and helped build, you know, Tulsa, the Greenwood area. And they all decided collectively that they wanted their money to be going back into their own neighborhoods instead of like outsourcing it other places. They wanted to give it to the neighborhood so that way they could, you know, in return have something for themselves.
And that was pretty amazing to me, because it's like, okay, well, you're not going to let us shop at your stores. Well, we're just going to build our own little town. They had their own barbershops, hair salon, pool halls, movie houses, grocery stores, doctors, lawyers, restaurants, jewelers, everything. They like completely kept their money in this town. Like, yeah, they may have to work for white people, but as soon as they got their check, they circulated right through the Greenwood community. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty awesome.
And then another like business that you didn't even mention was like the hotel business. There was the Stratford Hotel.
Yep.
And it was a black owned hotel, and it got burned down when the riot happened. But it would have, if it had stayed around, what I thought was so interesting about it was it would have been like the same as like a Hilton or Marriott. If he was able to keep that wealth, it would have been something of that stature. And then, so what led to the Tulsa Massacre? It begun on May 30th. There was a black man. His name was Dick Rowland. He worked as a shoe shiner. He rode, like he was headed on his break. They couldn't use the bathrooms where he worked at, so he had to head to like a different area of town to use the restroom. They had like a designated bathroom that they could use for colored people. So he was going to that bathroom. It was located on a higher floor. He had to get in an elevator. When he got in the elevators are like manually operated. So there was a white woman on the elevator. Something happened, not necessarily sure what happened, but she screamed and let out like a loud, like, you know, oh my gosh, something's going on. He got scared because, you know, at the time, if you're a black man with a white woman, it was just so many things that could have happened that could have went wrong. So instead of like even trying to apologize because he didn't do anything to her, he just got off the elevator and ran out of the building. The white woman was then comforted by a white security guard. And at first it seemed like it was just like, you know, like a small incident, like nothing much was gonna happen. The police were notified, but they didn't really do anything about it. When the issue became a bigger issue was the next day, they had a newspaper come out and it basically just said that this black man had tried to assault this white woman on an elevator. The white people in the town were outraged, but following this already, they were already kind of feeling some type of way about how well the black people in Tulsa were doing. So this was just, in my opinion, an opportunity to showcase, you know, hey, their power, like a power trip. They went to the courthouse where they were holding the black man, and then they were, when they got there, the black people in Greenwood decided that they were going to come too because they didn't want something to happen like a lynching. Mm-hmm. They were completely against the fact of them being lynched, this black man being lynched for something that he did not do. A lot of the people that lived in Greenwood were former vets, so they came down there with their guns. They're like, hey, we're not going to attack anybody, but we're not going to allow this person to be attacked, you know, so we're going to guard him. So they told the judge, hey, we're going to stay down here as long as we need to. But this black man, he's not going to be harmed. The judge then told them, it's fine. Nothing's going to happen to them. Nothing's going to happen to him. Y'all can leave. We don't need you here. The white mob was still out there. They were still like, you know, making their threats and stuff like that. A black man was like confronted by a white man. He was just basically saying like, what are you going to do? Like, why do you have this gun? He was like, I mean, I'm not going to use it, but if I have to, I will. And then they started struggling with the gun. A gunshot went off and then it broke out into like a whole bunch of mess. So once that gunshot went off, they called in the police. The police then assigned white men that were in the crowds, guns, or even if they weren't assigned guns, they went to different shops, broke into shops, looted and grabbed guns, grabbed anything that they could in order to, like, you know, destroy the area. At first, Greenwood was slick protected because they had a plan. They made sure that people weren't getting into, like, you know, their areas of where they were living and stuff like that. It got later at night, and they thought everything was fine because it seemed as though all the white people had left or went home or were not, that the situation was, like, de-escalating. But that was just the start of everything. That night, they went around, the white people, they went around, they burned down more than 1,000 homes, and they looted a bunch of businesses in that area. The whole town was destroyed. At the time, they said that the official death rate was 36, but it could have been as high as 300. And that's what we were talking about, like when they were talking about, like, you know, digging up the graves and stuff like that. They didn't even have the right account of how many people were affected by this.
Which, in general, like, just from the sound of this, thinking that only 36 people died, it's just like...
But y'all burned down the whole town.
Y'all burned down the whole town as far as restaurants, shops, mm-hmm. businesses, homes, like... And they were even gunning people down mm-hmm. in the streets if people tried to protect their house or their businesses. Mm-hmm. So it's like y'all knew good and well that there were more than 36 people that died, especially mm-hmm. since this attack was led by the police. Mm-hmm. Like, the police literally handed out guns to be like, okay, we gotta get these black people out of here. They've been doing too good and mm-hmm. keeping their money to their themselves. So, yeah, help us get these black people out of here. So, basically, they don't have to get their hands dirty
yeah.
with the murder and looting.
But yeah. So, insane. Yeah. And they said that more than 10,000 people were left homeless by the next day, which was June. Oh, and just so you're, like, even to put it into more perspective, this is on May 31st. So May 31st is Memorial Day, or, well, I guess would it have been Memorial Weekend? Or, yeah, so they would have been celebrating that, or it's ironic that it's, that was the
That
weekend.
Was happening.
Yeah.
And another thing that they said, fleeing residents that were gunned down in the street, a lot of people said they saw low-flying mm-hmm. planes that rained down bullets and inflammables mm-hmm. down on the neighborhood.
Some
so
of
they
the survivors.
Really, like, you know, put together all of this manpower and resources to take down Greenwood Ave.
Yeah, so, yeah, some of the survivors did account for, like, airplanes and stuff like that. And it's crazy to think, like, you know, that one incident is the reason why all this stuff happened. So in my mind, I mean, you'll never truly know, but it did seem like it was kind of planned, like they were just waiting for a moment to have mm-hmm. so they could do this with, and not have, like, any repercussions for the actions. And then, so by June 1st, the governor at that time declared martial law, and he sent the Oklahoma National Guard in, and those officials arrested and detained thousands of black Tulsans. And so basically, at that point, they had to go, like, to fairgrounds, and they were transported. They had to leave their homes if their home was still available, and they had to come with the guards, and they were put in this area. They had, like, a little badge, basically, kind of like a concentration camp. So, like, and then they weren't allowed to, this is the other kicker, they weren't allowed to leave these camps unless a white person vouched for them.
Yes, or bosses yeah. or any white person in the community had to come and be like, hey, that's my Negro. Give him here. I need him to come
yeah.
clean my house tomorrow. Don't keep him here. And if no white person vouched for them,
you were just stuck there.
They were just stuck there. And they only arrested black people. They didn't arrest any of the white mobsters that came in and did the burning, did the looting. Mm-hmm. They only arrested the black people whose home and town had been terrorized.
And their thought process behind it was they were saying they were doing this to protect them, mm-hmm. but they were never the problem. How are you? So, yeah, it was a whole disconnect with that. And then throughout that time, Tulsa had an American Red Cross hospital, and that's where they treated more than 800 people who were also injured throughout that time period. And yeah, that's like a little timeline breakdown of how the Tulsa massacre occurred and what led to the destroy of the Black Wall Street.
Yes, and to this day, no one has been held accountable mm-mm. for the deaths and the damage that is done to the Greenwood Ave. They just keep on insisting that this was instigated by the black community because, oh, well, they came down to the courthouse with guns, so they were gonna do something if we didn't do something to them first. Mm-hmm. So this incident still stands as one of the most horrific acts of racial violence and domestic terrorism to happen on American soil. Mm-hmm. According to the 2001 Tulsa Race Riot Commission report, Tulsa residents filed riot-related claims against the city valued at over $1.6 million. But the city commissioner, much like the insurance companies, denied most of these claims. Mm-hmm. They said the one exception of this is a white man the white business owner received compensation for guns that were taken from his shop. That's the only claim that they approved and gave money for. However, the commission recommended that survivors be paid reparations, calling it a moral obligation. The pursuit of restitution, it continues. So a lot of people, they just kind of left Tulsa and never came back. But some people stayed and tried to, you know, start from scratch to build back up what was known as Black Wall Street. So during this researching, I found that some of the survivors who, like, the people that are still living, it's only three of them, mm-hmm. they're trying to sue to get reparations. So this article is Oklahoma's High Court will consider a reparations case from 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre survivors. So after a lower court judge dismissed it, now the Oklahoma Supreme Court will consider a reparations case from survivors of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. They said this gives hope to advocates for the racial justice that government may make amends in one of the worst single acts of violence against U.S. black. After the initial dismissal, the survivors appealed the state's high court agreed last week to consider whether the decision was proper and if the case should be returned to her court for further consideration. In response to the appeal, the state told the court that it won't consider a settlement with the survivors. As I mentioned, only 3 survivors of the attack are still alive, and of course, they are over 100 years old.
Yep.
They have sued for reparations from the city, state, and others for the white mob's destruction of the once thriving black neighborhood. Several other original plaintiffs who are descendants of the survivors were dismissed from the case by a trial court judge in 2022. So this was interesting and still disrespectful to me, mm-hmm. because
I was making faces the whole time. You, like, it's hard to not make faces. Like, it provokes emotion.
It definitely evokes emotions because, A, they're only allowing the survivors to be a part of this lawsuit, but they're prolonging anything to happen. And these people are over 100 years
old. Like 106 years old, 107 years old.
So if you stall this out for 5 years, who's to say that these people will still be living? And then the case will just be dropped because they won't let descendants of the survivors in on the lawsuit.
And the other part was, hopefully this makes amends. It's not making any amends because y'all aren't working towards doing anything that y'all are saying y'all are trying to do. If y'all really wanted to make amends, it wouldn't just be the 3 survivors that are left. It would be for the businesses that y'all know were there. So you could contact people that are descendants of those businesses. Mm-hmm. They still deserve compensation for those things that they lost. And instead of doing that, they're just completely, in my opinion, like they're doing the case, dismissing it.
Just very much dismissing it. And something further that I saw this morning with the totally unrelated but still kind of related, New York is giving reparations to Holocaust descendants and things of that mm-hmm. nature. So it's like, if certain people can do this for certain groups, why couldn't it be done
for this group?
For black people, you know? So it was very upsetting to really read that article about the survivors' lawsuit being blocked and, you know, oh, well, let's see if this person will approve it. Well, what does the Supreme Court say this? Well, the Supreme Court might say, let's put it back down to the lower court. And it's just tied up in a lot of rigmarole, basically. Yeah. Just going through the motions of keeping lawsuits going. Like, these people, you know, have the time for all of this.
And it also is kind of sad, too, because it's forcing the survivors to keep on having to relive that trauma. Imagine being 6 or 7, which were, mm-hmm. like this, the age group for them, 6 or 7, and then being over 100 years old, having to recount what happened to you and how you lost your whole life, your family, all your friends, everything you lived in, had to live in basically a concentration camp. It's a lot of things that I just feel like is very insensitive. And if it was a different set of people, it would probably be handled totally different. And then also, even with the survivors as well, it's like, as you're asking them to recount these lived traumas that they've had, then as they're getting older, it's probably harder to do. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you're using that as, on top of it. So it's like, what if they can't remember certain things? Oh, well, since they don't remember, then they don't really need that set of reparations for what it is or whatever the case may be. I feel like it's really insensitive.
Very insensitive. So if you want to know more about this, but don't necessarily want to read about it, there are plenty of documentaries and films out, one of which being on HBO Max, Dreamland, The Burning of Black Wall Street. And this was a very interesting documentary. They likened Greenwood Avenue with a mixture of Harlem, Bourbon Street, and Chocolate City. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just, you know, thriving, very Black, very much Richwood culture. But even the mayor said that they don't even learn about this in Tulsa. Like, mm-hmm. this isn't in anybody's history books. They don't talk about it in the history classes or anything.
Yeah, and to add on, I know that you said, like, that it was thriving, had a lot of culture. It also was very, like, prestigious in a sense. It was very, like, clean. Not necessarily, I wouldn't necessarily say the word uppity, but it was like a, it was like beyond what you were recognized for, like a Black community. Because they usually try to paint Black communities as, you know, ghetto or torn down, like very just ran down. And that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. Tulsa was a place, well, Greenwood was a place that even white Americans back then looked at it and was like, well, dang, these people are doing better than how we are doing. They didn't necessarily like the fact that that part of Tulsa looks so much better and well represented, like better than their community.
Yes. And so, as you mentioned, when you ran down the facts, they were on Native American land. Mm-hmm. Which, so this land was started by the 5 civilized Native American mm-hmm. tribes, and all that means is, like, they adopted, you know, the white man's view of how they should live and things of that nature. So the 5 civilized Native American tribes, they were there until the 1800s, until the Indian Removal Act. Mm-hmm. So they made them swap land. So they were like, oh, well, you know, you guys did so well here, you know, we'll take this and y'all can go over there. Mm-hmm. They really just took the land from them. And I guess I never really connected it until I was watching Dreamland. I'm like, oh snap, this is the Trail of Tears. Like, this is mm-hmm. the same place. I just never really connected that. So they talked about how the Indians, they had Black slaves that they called the Freedmen's mm-hmm. until the U.S. government, you know, said that they couldn't have slaves anymore. And that they had to split their land with the slaves. Mm-hmm. So that's how this all, you know, really much came to be, because they couldn't be enslaved anymore. And they were granted land because they were enslaved by the Indians. And at that point, it became a dreamland for more Blacks. And they sent out, like, bulletin announcements all over, like, hey, we got this great thing over here in Tulsa. So if you're Black and you want to, you know, be in a Black neighborhood and thrive with us, yeah. come out to Tulsa.
Because of the segregation. Mm-hmm. Especially in the South, they were like, hey, come to Greenwood. There's a place for you. You don't necessarily have to deal with those things. This movie was actually, like, a really good, like, historic, like, mm-hmm. you know, remark for certain things that you might not know about. I'm trying to think about the other thing that I learned throughout the movie. It just lit my brain. It was about the how at the time when they first came, it wasn't necessarily a state. And that, or maybe that was the Hulu one, I can't remember. But at first, Tulsa wasn't a state, or that land wasn't a state, so they didn't have, like, some of the laws that made it for the segregation, which made Black people more inclined to come, too. I thought that was pretty.
Mm-hmm. And in the movie, in the documentary, they also showed current-day Greenwood, mm-hmm. where people have revitalized a bunch of the shops and descendants of, you know, the people that were involved in the race wars. They took back these shops, and, you know, it might not be the original, but they definitely are revitalizing Greenwood. Mm-hmm. And with that, I want to bring up a current day business.
So while we're still thinking about it, we want to give a special shout out to a company in Greenwood. It's called Greenwood Ave. They have a YouTube channel. Y'all could check them out. They sell apparel, and they also have some videos on YouTube that you can look into. Definitely check them out.
The owner, he reimagined some of the original shops and made new logos for them, and that's what's on the t-shirts that are sold, and some of the proceeds go back to revitalizing Greenwood Ave. So definitely check them out. We'll include them down in the link below. And that concludes this episode of the Hood Health Report.
This is a wrap for this episode. I hope y'all enjoyed it. You can follow us on Instagram, which is Hood Health Report, as well as Facebook and Twitter, Hood Health Pod.
We also have a TikTok page now, Hood Health Report. Follow us there.
Yeah.
Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel. All of the links will be in the descriptions and the bios for you to click on easily.
Tap, like, comment, do it all.
Subscribe, all of the things. Share it with a friend.
Yes.
Share it on your social media.
If you have a TikTok, make a little video, send it.
Let us know you're out there watching, guys.